I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We're celebrating 24 years in business and just entering our 11th year of doing open line. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our 2018 open line format that comes with the launching of our brand new website. You can peruse that. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. And over a decade of doing this, you can pretty much figure that we've covered most of the topics that you can think of. So if you want to look up for any topic as far as a publication or for open line programs, it's pretty much there. And we just finished our third book. It's just been launched, Cracking the High Performance Team Code. It's available by either clicking on the icon on our homepage, and it's also available on Amazon. And we also now offer skills testing, which has really taken off and is a big hit with our clients. Our topic today is effective leadership and progressive discipline. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management workshops, and much, much more. We have an office in Taiwan now, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas for how to best interact with a U.S.-based company, just let us know. We also have an affiliate in Europe, so we are truly a global multinational organization. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to the number of calls we get from our different clients, both domestically and globally, and we want to address the issues that people are facing today, and that's how this topic came about, actually. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion. We'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, so please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion, we're going to open up the line, so if you'd like to talk with our guests directly, you'll have that opportunity. This is a real pleasure to have Dan Hammond, who's a longtime friend, past client, and Dan is our newest addition as far as being a senior consultant with Lighthouse Consulting Services. Dan has experience as an executive and leader with a proven track record in running and growing high entrepreneurial organizations and companies. Dan has also built, mentored, and retained world-class teams that achieve breakthrough and universal breakthroughs with the Mars Project, the Tanner, as we were talking about earlier, results. His management experience includes product development, marketing, sales, worldwide operations, and profit and loss. I'm so privileged to have Dan with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic is, do you have a zombie-like culture? 5 steps on where to begin a change. So that should be an interesting and fun one. Dan, I want to welcome you. And also, I was talking with a client the other day, and I heard a supervisor say the following to one of his employees. This is the 4th day of this week you've been late. We were on a conference call. Do you know what that means? And the employee said, yeah, it's Thursday. Thank you. Somebody laughed. But the topic that you're going to be covering today is going to address that, because this is a really tough one. This is a tough topic for everyone to have to deal with, and that's why we're having an open line, because we like to address issues and ideas that are needed in the workplace. So, Dan, I'll let you take the reins here.
Thank you, Dana. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure to speak with you and be with you. And that's a very interesting thing that you mentioned about the client you were talking about. Yes, hopefully there'll be a few things here in the program today that you can use so that a supervisor can better address that lateness issue with that worker. So thank you for that. Bringing that up, it's very, very, very appropriate and timely here. Okay, obviously the topic today is effective leadership and progressive discipline. And the usual disclaimer, I'm not an attorney, and if there are any sort of employment law issues that you want to tackle, just reach out to that particular set of professionals. If you need any referrals, I'm sure Dana would be happy to provide some names. And I really want to start our conversation then by really tackling the concept of leadership. We hear this word often, but we assume that somehow it applies to just a very small group of people in society, maybe the one or two individuals nominally in charge of a company or other organization. But I think that understanding of leadership is just not sufficient. We need to expand the concept to include individual contributors, to include frontline supervisors, to include managers, to include managers of managers, and so on. So we find leaders all around us in all these roles in every organization. Peter Drucker, who is widely recognized as the father of modern management, refers to all these leaders as executives. Peter Drucker's work has been very influential in my professional life, so I want to spend some time today touching on his work and hopefully show you how it can provide a solid foundation for how to enable effective contributions and performance from everyone in your organizations.
Dan, also I want to mention to everybody that this is such a we only have a limited period of time to cover this in-depth topic, and Dan was kind enough to write an article for us for our Keeping on Track publication. It will be coming out on May 1st. So I just wanted to mention that.
Great. Yeah, thank you. You should see our agenda slide. These are the topics we're gonna touch on today. So we'll be talking about effective leadership, the challenges in being effective, and we'll also see that effectiveness actually can be learned if we practice some habits, if we do a little bit of extra work. I will then introduce the Mike Deblier and Lee Patterson framework for handling employee behavior and tie that in with progressive discipline. You've heard me say these names already, but I'm not an HR practitioner. I'm an entrepreneurial guy who's built companies and run organizations, but I've relied heavily on what I've learned from Peter Drucker, Mike Deblier, and Lee Patterson. So additional resources from these gentlemen are available, lots of books and stuff, and if you need any specific pointers to a specific topic from them, I'm more than happy to provide that for you later on. Okay, so just a little bit of background on Peter Drucker. Some of you may have heard of him. Peter Drucker is considered the inventor of modern management. He was born in Austria, lived in Vienna, worked in Hamburg, Frankfurt, and London. He was also a professor at New York University for over 20 years and at the Claremont Graduate University from 1971 to 2002. So that's a long, long tenure. He was a management consultant and an author of 39 books. He developed one of the very first executive MBA programs, and the management department at the Claremont Graduate University is now called the Drucker School of Management. Now, our other two authors that we're going to be drawing from today, Mike DePlio, Lee Patterson. Mike is a human resources management trainer and consultant. His topics include discipline, performance reviews, interviewing, and several others. Lee Patterson is an employment law attorney and a published author in labor relations, labor unions, and so on. Okay, I touched earlier on about the fact that leadership does not require a formal title. So titles like supervisor, manager, director, executive, any of these titles could describe a leader. I mean, according to Peter Drucker, every knowledge worker is an executive if by virtue of their position or knowledge they are responsible for a contribution that materially affects the capacity of a company to perform and obtain results. So pretty much these days, in today's economy, that's all of us, no matter what we do. But it is difficult. It is difficult. There are challenges to getting the right things done, which is really the definition of effectiveness. It's hard. And these challenges are significant because the executive or leader has little to no control over them. Now, let's start with time. The leader's time tends to belong to everyone else. I'm sure you've seen that, you've felt it, you deal with it on a daily basis. it's hard to say no or to limit interruptions from your best customer, from a key vendor, from your boss, from a board member, a government official, and on and on. Number two is that, you know, as leaders, a lot of us are sort of forced to keep operating unless we take positive action to change how we work. So if the CEO was the person who started manufacturing a product, you may see that CEO is still running manufacturing today, or the VP of sales might still be doing direct sales today. So it's just a trend that is hard to change. Another reality pushing the executive toward ineffectiveness is that they are within an organization, and they're only effective if and when other people make use of their contribution. And to make it even more complicated, most of these people may not even be in the sort of reporting structure of that manager or supervisor. They might even be a boss, or they might report completely differently into another part of the company. So this makes it difficult as well. This is a great concept that I've seen in Drucker's work, is the idea that as a leader, and really for all of us within an organization, the view of the world is filtered by the organizational lens. And let's unpack that a little bit. It really basically says that when we're inside something, that something is a fairly vivid and immediate reality. We are in it, we're breathing it, we're living it. And the outside information, when we see it, it really comes through a filter of how the organization thinks. It's got some implicit biases in it, and therefore it's hard to really know what's going on. So what follows then is that, according to Drucker, reality is really outside the organization, and that the important and relevant events are often qualitative instead of the stream of numbers that come from the outside in terms of reports to a leader. And the truly important events are not trends, but the changes in the trends. And if we want to be more blunt about it, you could even say an organization has nothing but costs and effort. There's nothing else to it. And it's only when an outside actor, a customer, willingly uses their purchasing power to turn those costs and efforts into revenues and profits. If that doesn't happen, then the business doesn't really, it's nothing. It's not doing anything of economic value.
So when the, and when, so the reaction, if someone, a staff member is doing something they shouldn't be doing, and it's going to affect the outside world or the income structure, that's what triggers off the issue. Is that correct?
Well, it's really a question of we get so comfortable, and it's human nature, so comfortable in being where we are in a group, in these four walls, that we just focus on that more than we focus on what's happening outside. And we have to keep in mind that as the only reason of existence for this organization is to provide something that somebody wants to buy. So when we or employees are not doing things that contribute to that, then we're failing. So it's a call. It should be like a daily call to action, and it's just focus on the outside. If the customer does not willingly buy our products or services, then we are not doing anything. That's our reason to exist. Our efforts are not going to be productive.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Of course. Okay, so it's hard, right? We talked about how hard it is to be effective, but effectiveness can be learned, and it has to be. We have no choice. I mean, society relies on effective organizations. Just picture a day when, let's picture, UPS is not working, you know, and you need your packages to assemble a product, or maybe the airlines are not able to get you to your destination when you want to get there. Modern society would just not work. So in order for society, for organizations to be effective, you need effective leaders as well. So here are the five habits to be more effective. And practicing them will make you more effective. Number one is time. It's systematically managing and consolidating the time that you are able to control. It could be a lot, it could be a little, but just being proactive about it. Number two is focusing on contribution and results and not really on activity. Always asking ourselves, what results are expected of me? As we'll see in a little bit, employees cannot contribute if there are shortcomings in discipline or behavior or both. And for a supervisor, manager, leader, the inability to effectively address these employee issues will also stand in the way of their own contributions. So it's important that we are able to tackle both of those. Number three is building on strength, yours and your team members. Number four, and I love this quote from Peter Drucker, which is about priorities, is that you do first things first and second things not at all. And let me talk a little bit more about that. It's really saying that you have to understand and come up with some priorities where you are working on areas where superior performance from you and your team will produce outstanding results, and that you will be determined to stay with those priority decisions. And from that, you know, you will be successful, and your company will be successful. Not a big advocate of multitasking. Certainly not at this level. So first things first, and second things, not at all.
A question just came in. I'm going to try and capture this. If the supervisor has explained something to an individual and what first things should come first, but the person is hearing it differently or putting what the supervisor would think are second things first, but they keep going to that second thing instead of the first, what are some thoughts around that? Are we going to deal with that later on?
I think we can apply the framework later on. My comment right now would be along the lines of finding multiple ways to communicate information effectively with your employees. We'll touch on that also. But the idea is that we are going to find ways to agree on objectives and agree on priorities. We're going to use multiple channels, multiple ways to communicate those. Check in, you know, gradually to see if our communication has been successful. And going always back as leaders and supervisors that I am responsible for getting my message across. And we need to continue working on that, make sure that if there's an issue, that we improve how we message so that the employee understands what we want done.
Okay. I think that, and somebody else just asked the question, does this mean there are no second things? And I think that just answered that. It's all priorities.
There are of course second things, but the main takeaway from that quote is not really literal, but it's the idea that you have to be laser focused on the one thing that will get you the most outstanding results if you really work at it. And the second thing could come after you complete the first thing, and so on, right? But it's a sense of, well, where can you best spend your energy and your insights and your skills to achieve the most results. Optimization of management is another way to call it, perhaps.
Perfect.
Yeah, thank you for the questions. Those are good questions. Okay, so starting with this slide, we're going to transition into the Leo Patterson model for observing and documenting employee behavior. And this slide is sort of foundation for that. And it's really coming down to what is the role and responsibility of management? What are the core things that management is supposed to do? I mean, if we don't know those, we can't really be that effective. So the first thing is just getting results through people, achieving results through people. The next thing is helping employees succeed at the work. Third thing is communication, just being an excellent communicator, and identifying and correcting performance problems. Just a few more words about communication. By communicating well, we mean that we clarify expectations verbally and in writing, that we celebrate good and outstanding performance, and that we communicate clearly, accurately, and in a timely manner. All right, so with that foundation, let's move on to the model. Okay, so this is the W. Patterson model again, and it consists of four core things: facts, objectives, solutions, and actions. And let's go over those. So first we deal with facts. This is not about conjectures or assumptions or probabilities. So we deal with specific observations and none of the other things. We are clear on objectives. We describe the behavior we expect the employees to exhibit, both in terms of results or behavior or both. Third, we propose solutions, and these are suggestions or ideas to help employees reach the objectives that we have set up for them, to help them succeed. And that's really the core. We want to enable employees to succeed and give them all the tools that are reasonable for them to achieve that goal. And actions is about stating what is going to happen now and what will happen in the future if the behavior doesn't change or the performance does not improve. Let me emphasize here for a little bit that this framework has a strong focus on documentation. It's not just a way to think, it's a way to document as well. And written documentation should meet the communication requirements we talked about earlier. Has to be clear, has to be accurate, has to be timely. And you must really record relevant interactions and counseling sessions you have with the employee. You must write accurate performance reviews and so on and so on.
Dan, a question came in. What's a good way for a supervisor to capture performance and behavioral issues?
Of course, a good question. There's a couple of ways, a couple of suggestions that I've seen done and that some of these I've done myself. You could carry a little pocket notebook with you. Just put every morning you put today's date on it and you see so-and-so happened to be late for work and I coached them about it, or somebody else made a mistake again on the data entry for a particular project, you jot that down. Or you can just have, if you're mostly out of the office, desk bound, you can have like a little paper file for every employee and you just pull that out and make your note there so that you can have all the facts that you might need later. Of course, with a smartphone, you can have a Google or Microsoft document or calendar that you can access from your device and just make a quick note of what you saw and what you observed and what your thoughts are, and that should help you. So just nothing too extreme, just pretty basic stuff. So just find the type of device or medium that works for you and go with that.
And the goal is to be factual and not be have something, I think that, but have factual information that you can come back to and discuss for correction.
Correct. It's facts. It's what you observed, what you saw, what you heard, what action you took on the spot, what was said, what happened. Was it 10 mistakes? Was it one mistake? Was it something brand new? Was it just, exactly.
Many times we'll be talking to a client going over there. Let's say we're talking about an in-depth personality assessment for a new hire coming in, and then somebody will be talking about somebody else and some issue, and I'll say, well, have you spoken with them about that? And the response is usually, well, no, but they should know better.
Exactly.
Yeah, no communication whatsoever, but there's expectations being laid out there, obviously.
Right, and they should know better. That is not part of this way of handling employee discipline. Is not going to be helpful because should know better is not objective. It's not something that the employee will just say, well, what do you mean I should know better? It wasn't clear to me. I didn't know. Maybe there was some misunderstanding. So you're right. It's got to be clearly documented.
Thanks, Dan. That's perfect.
All right. Okay, so we're going to now talk about a couple of things that will help you with that process. And again, this is the W. Patterson model again, just focusing on being objective, not subjective. So we're going to talk about what happened, when it happened, where it happened, who was involved, how it happened. We're going to try to bring as many of our senses into this way of thinking, like I saw, I heard, I touch, I smell, I taste it. And these things will help us really come to the facts and not to something that is subjective or might be misinterpreted or misconstrued or not help you at all in terms of potential litigation. I know it sounds weird here that we talked about I touched, and let me just give you an example here. Where a supervisor would say such a thing. Let's say that you have an employee who has struggled to keep his part of his manufacturing line clean and in top operating condition. You could say, "Hey, I saw a pool of liquid in your work area. I smelt it and touched it, and it smelled like oil from the equipment in your station." So that establishes facts and not opinions, and helps paint a full picture of what actually happened.
Yeah, that brings up a funny story, actually. A number of years ago, a client of ours, they had hired somebody with a lot of background. People knew the person, and the person ended up biting someone.
Wow.
So they really did touch someone. And they thought no one said anything about it at first. And then it happened again, and then it all of a sudden became a big deal. But when they finally asked the person, "Why are you doing this, or why'd you do that then and now?" "Well, I really appreciate who they are, and that's just how I show my affection." And they're like, "Oh, that's odd."
Say, wow.
Yeah. Talk about touching, huh?
Yeah. All right. So I know the program today doesn't really allow us to take detailed, specific examples and work through those to illustrate objective interaction. But here's a very brief example. Let's say you're at your company yard and you see John, and John is not wearing any of his safety gear. So you could come to him and say, "Hey, John, don't forget to wear your hard hat, protective eyeglasses, and steel-toe shoes next time." A better way to address John would be along the lines of, "Hey, John, the company safety rules require you to wear a hard hat, protective eyeglasses, and steel-toe shoes at all times on the company yard. I expect you to put your hard hat, eyeglasses, and steel-toe shoes on before you enter the company yard." So you can see the difference. We're referring to rules, where we're talking about expectations, sort of being very factual and objective about the process.
That's well put.
All right, so let's go to the next slide, and then we'll talk about progressive discipline. And progressive discipline, what it is just a series of graduated steps. They're training, counseling, oral warning, written warning, last step option, termination. And training is really for needed skills or needed change of behavior. This is something that we offer employees so that they can have the tools to do the work or behave according to our standards. Counseling is really a way to address problems early, and it's a good faith effort that you are working with that person to help them achieve their goals. Oral warning is when you're notifying the employee that the ongoing behavior will lead to discipline, and the other steps are obviously the implementation of that more formal discipline. Okay, DeBlieu and Patterson talk about three objective reasons for termination. And those are a layoff, violation of rules, and inability to perform. Clearly, a layoff is not discipline and should not be used as such. And if you're in the unfortunate situation of considering a layoff, then you really need to seek counsel in terms of what criteria you have to have in mind so that it's done the right way. Violation of rules, then documented violation of rules is a valid reason for discipline, and we'll see some of the things you have to have in mind if you want to follow that process. Same with the inability to perform to a standard. You need a valid reason for discipline, and we'll see some requirements for that. Okay, let's say you are about to take an action based on a violation of a rule. Before you do that, you have to make sure that the rule exists. Make sure that that's the case. Make sure that the rule has been identified, and make sure that the rule applies to the situation.
Oh, I mean, let me interrupt here for a second. That is really important. That's a really important point, because we'll hear sometimes individuals say, but it's common sense, or it's in our handbook, and they go to look in the handbook, and there's nothing written there.
Right. That's right, Dana. It's got to be clear. You got to step back. Again, it's factual. It's cool-headed. It's like, is there a rule? Does it exist? Was it identified? Does it apply? I mean, if there's a rule for something that you may not do on your company property, but the employee crosses the street into some other property and whatever that behavior is happens there, then clearly that rule does not apply there, right? So it's a basic but very, very key issue. Of course, I mean, there are certain things like criminal behavior that are different, and then that's when you need to check with your attorney about that. But in general, absolutely, you have to identify the rule, make sure it exists, and it applies. Next, before you proceed with discipline based on violation of rules, is proving that the employee knew the rule. So it may be in the handbook, but did they actually know it? Are they aware of it? And you have to prove that the rule was violated. Again, did you observe that behavior? How did you observe it? Where did you observe it? When did it happen? Did somebody else observe it? Then for observations, you need to also be objective with certain guidelines in terms of gathering objective feedback from whoever saw that. Next thing is, has the rule been applied consistently? Whether it's across departments or within your own department, that's key as well. You cannot discipline if there's been inconsistent application of a rule. And, of course, you have to show that you made a reasonable effort to change the employee's behavior. Again, the goal of this philosophy and to be effective is not to discipline and discipline and discipline. It's to give employees a chance to change and to improve and to achieve their goals.
And that's the goal
and
here,
of course,
to help people. I'm sorry, Dan.
No, sorry, go ahead.
To help people to be successful. We just had a question come in. What is the validating factors to ensure the employees know the rules?
It ranges from obviously having like an employee handbook and having a session where you go over that document. You can have a piece of paper that acknowledges receipt of the document. You can have regular training sessions. I know some companies have a weekly, sometimes even daily review of key rules, sometimes of safety rules in other areas. So that you can do it in multiple ways, but you have to have, you know, dates, times. You have to have proof that it was done, proof that the employee was there. And those are some ways that people do that.
That's great. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just finishing up that last item. I was saying that, yes, it's about changing, helping the employee achieve their goals, and obviously documenting the progressive discipline steps above help you show that you've done that.
And these sound like really basic things, but we're in the heat of the moment. So, Dan, I have a question for you, because you've been in management many years, and you've seen it all, let's say. Where is the line of demarcation where the manager just feels really uncomfortable about saying something to somebody that they'll feel so uncomfortable they won't bring it up?
Yeah, that's a hard one, and it really depends on the topic. It depends on the issue. But one take on that is like, as managers and leaders, we should not shy away from doing the difficult things or having the tough conversations, right? It's how we approach it. It has to come from a heart of being willing to help someone and doing what we're able to do to help them, doing everything possible to help them. There's some uncomfortable conversations, so I would say seek guidance from trusted advisors, from maybe your HR professional, some communication experts to help you do that. But there's probably nothing more meaningful than being able to tackle difficult subjects and have conversations that change people for the better.
And another question just came in. What can be done if employees don't accept or sign or acknowledge the receiving of a handbook?
Yes, that's a good question. And I think it's a tricky part because what often some of these documents say, I have read this document, so some employees might say, well, I don't want to sign that. Then what you can do is talk about, well, acknowledge that you've we offer you this chance to read it and that you said no. And that's a tough one. That's a tough one. And that might be a question for an attorney and how to best guide that.
Yeah, talk to an HR consultant around that or your attorney and just check on that. And all this seems petty because we're all here to take our products or our services and to help provide that product or service to the community at some level or another. Yet these ticklish things get in the way of that success. And so we're trying to create some boundaries or rules or guidelines to help people to prevent them from stepping all over themselves. And what if they do? So it's not ruining the environment for others.
Right. And I think for me, I go back to sort of the beginning of our conversation this morning, which was in the end, you know, if we want to do great things to change the world, we do need people. And people, all of us, we're not perfect. So we have to come from that spirit. We're going to change the world. We need people, and we have to take them as they are, as we are, and we have to have grace and just accept that we all can be better.
And that's why it's important to do the best interviewing up front. And I think every CEO I've spoken to that's retired comes back with the same response on what's the biggest thing they've learned over the years. And the biggest thing they've learned was how to learn how to ask the right questions. And that all starts during the interview process and doing proper screening.
Well, Dana, one of the debts of gratitude I have with you, I mean, we've been working together, we've known each other for a long time, but is the idea of the insights that you provided in some of the early hiring that I did just huge, sort of transformational in terms of not just bringing a good team, but bringing a great team on board. And you're right, it's about interviewing, it's about becoming a better interviewing, a better person when it comes to like finding out what someone is like and using, you know, a lot of tools that frankly you have available in terms of assessments to help managers do that.
Thank you. Oh, appreciate that, Dan.
Okay. Then we have the last objective reason for discipline is the inability to perform. This is just someone who is just not performing up to a standard or their performance is declining compared to that standard. And here, the standard is really a measurable behavior or result. And again, like with other things, it has to be known. The employee needs to know what that standard is, what the goal is, what they're aiming for, and it has to be reasonable. It can't be like, well, everybody else, you know, is making 500 widgets a day, but you, Jane, you're supposed to do 1,305. That would not be seen as reasonable. Then another thing to keep in mind is that you have documented the failure to meet objectives on an ongoing basis. That this is not the first time, and you're not going to act on the first time, that you have taken steps in terms of counseling, coaching, talking about it, describing potential steps that would happen if this performance does not improve. So you've done all that. You've documented that. You've used progressive discipline, and you have that all available. And again, going back to our mission as managers and leaders is just to give employees a fair chance to succeed, to do every reasonable thing we can to help them meet their goals. And of course, we have progressive discipline to help prove that if it comes to that.
There was a client of ours for many years, a director of HR, said if progressive disciplining is done appropriately, by the third time, the person walks in and they already know what the issue is, and they'll usually go, I understand, and they'll start packing up and leaving. But that's if it's done appropriately, which is the goal.
Right, in the unfortunate event that it leads to termination, if you do this right, there's a complete understanding how this is expected, how this has to happen, and often it leads to good transformations for people. They realize, no, I really messed up, and I need to change my ways. And unfortunately, I won't be able to do it here, but on my next gig, I'll do it, and that's a good thing for everybody.
It is a very good thing. That's a very good thing.
Well, okay, I think we're at the end of my notes here. Dana, what other questions might we have, or what other thoughts do you have?
We are. We're going to open up the line in just a minute. I want to, before we turn the recording feature off, because we've been requested in the past not record the Q&A at the end. People didn't want their voices recording. I want to thank Dan for being a part of this program today, for joining Lighthouse. And for those of you who want for our next program, you can sign up now. Do you have a zombie-like culture, 5 steps to change it? You can sign up today for that. And I want to thank everyone for attending. Whoever's going to hang on right now, oh, we have one more question before we go on to this. I don't know if Dan's going to be able to handle this. How do we address a learned disability?
I'm thinking that's a learning disability. That's a different thing, and that's where you would need some professionals in employment law and maybe HR to really give you good guidance on it. There's a concept of accommodation that you need to be aware of. So yeah, we'll have to refer that out to other folks.
Okay, and one more question, then we're going to open up the line. How much of a fair chance is fair? That's a great question.
It is a great question, and I think it almost, again, I'm not a law expert. I would say if it seems like you've gone above and beyond and you've given more chances than any other person would have done, then you probably reached the point where it's fair to do that, to move to a harsher form of discipline.
But let's be really clear on something. That usually if someone has some skill or talent that they bring to the table and somebody doesn't want to upset the apple cart, then that's the company's fault for not being a little more stricter on whatever it is. And so someone could get upset and go, well, how come they get to come in late and I don't, or something like that. But it needs to be equal for everybody. So if everyone's supposed to be there at 8:30 and someone comes in at 8:41 every single day, I call it the rule of three. So once things happen 3 times and you've gone through it, you got to be fair to everybody, and fairness is equal opportunity. There's just one more question here. Let me just read it real quick. How do we handle an employee who is emotional or takes things in a negative way rather than positive? Dan, do you have any thoughts on that?
I was going to defer to you. That's more of your bailiwick, I think, in terms of personality and all that.
I would say we would go back to the in-depth work-style personality assessment and then see how to approach the individual. So it's not going to break them down, but you also know how to – you get the point across to them also, because you need to be fair, but in fairness goes back to what's equal for everybody else. We're going to open up the line in just a second, so I'm going to ask everyone that's staying on to please put your phone on mute. Don't put it on hold, because then we'll all hear music. So put your phone on mute, unmute it to ask Dan a question, and we'll be right back in just a few seconds. So please stand by.